We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildebrandt. Joining me, as always, over there, back in New York City, my man, Dan Rubenstein. Sir, how are you?
Is this one of the latest Solid Verbals we've ever recorded outside of a post-national championship situation?
Wow. It is 9:40.
9:40 Eastern.
Eastern time on my clock right now. It's certainly one of the later shows. We're old men. We don't usually stay up this late on a school night.
So this will either go to a punchy place, or hopefully you're listening to this as you go asleep and we just drift off with you, coast to coast.
Figured I'd give you a little extra pause there. Yeah, for sure.
No, I like that. I like the runway you gave me. No, it is certainly one of the later shows we've done, and I'm actually pretty happy about it because I was able to fill my belly, so I can't say I'm hungry. Went to, you've never been to this place, I don't think, Prince Street Pizza.
No.
In Manhattan, in New York.
I have not.
It's the best square slice in New York.
Nice.
It totally and completely is. Went there with our pal Andy Staples. He's in town for the SI NFL draft show. I'm also participating in this live NFL draft show. If you happen to be listening to this Thursday, whatever tomorrow's date is, what, the 25th?
25th, and yeah.
Yeah, 7:30, 8 o'clock, tune on into SI Now on their Twitter feed or their YouTube channel. I think it's going to be in a bunch of places, Facebook, you know how it works.
Sure. So all the social media.
I'm going to be cooking food with Andy Staples, and when people like Daniel Jones or Drew Locke are drafted, and we'll be the ones to say, here's the thing about those two guys.
That's right. That's right.
Not like the greatest college quarterbacks.
I'm glad somebody,
yeah,
can speak truth to power, because the Giants are totally drafting Daniel Jones, and it's going to bother me. But
it's, oh, that's going to be a rough pick if that happens.
Well, it's going to happen.
Everybody's listening to this after the fact. So,
oh yeah.
Wow, what a pick!
It's going to happen, man. I can feel it in my bones.
I'm sorry that take exists within your brain.
I know. I can't get rid of it.
We have a special show tonight, though.
We have a special show tonight. So as we said last week, we're not going to do the thing where we invite a draft nick on the program and say, who's going to go third in the draft? A lot of folks do that. There's nothing wrong with doing that. We have done that for umpteen years running now. But the problem with that is nobody really wants to go on the record with where guys are going to get drafted, because they know the overwhelming majority of their predictions will be rendered moot in the span of about 3 hours. So this year, we're going to go at it a little bit differently. We're going to try and peel back the curtain after the fact, do a bit of a draft retrospective with a special guest that we're excited about. So we'll do that at some point over the next couple of weeks after the draft actually goes through and is complete. For tonight, though,
Yeah, by the way, there's a lot after the, like, I am very curious about, you hear about Nick Saban opening up, you know, rolling out the red carpet for NFL scouts, because why wouldn't he? You know, it looks great when Alabama produces all these NFL players. I'm curious the relationship and how scouts operate within the college football world. I think that's fascinating.
Tonight, we're doing hot takes, Dan. We're doing hot takes. Now, for those who have listened to the program since 2008, when we first got this whole operation started,
right,
neither you nor I are particularly hot takesy. This isn't like WIP in Philly, okay?
Okay.
We're trying to do a show that entertains from the college football perspective, but at the same time offers real factual insight into what's going on, sometimes better than others.
Also, a fashion advice for husky gentlemen. Don't
That's
forget
right.
that. That's a corner that is part of our show, thanks to Andy.
Tonight, we're going to get a little bit more controversial than usual, if you want to call it that. We're going to kick it up a notch.
A little bit here.
I've got some other sounds that we might play depending on the spiciness of the take. We did go out on Twitter at Solid Verbal, where, of course, you can always find us and follow us and join along in all the college football fun. We did a little bit of crowdsourcing to see what other hot takes may exist in the college football world.
Yeah, I don't even know if our takes are nearly... Well, we had envisioned giving our 2019 takes when we were doing our haphazard planning of this show. And then you opened it up to the verballers out there, the verballosphere.
Sure.
And I think theirs are better. I mean, they went in back in time. It was like 1993, Virginia was a fraud. And I was like, wait, huh? Hold on. Wikipedia, help me out here. But they're all over the place. And I almost think going through the... Should we devise a spice level for these takes or something? Like, should there be mild, medium, hot, and then atomic? Or like Jay Paterno's take HD?
When I go to the Thai restaurant down the road here, before I order my pad thai with chicken.
Oh my, what a creative order.
I know,
oh
I know.
Oh my gosh, look
it's
at
okay.
this guy.
It's okay, don't
straight
be
out of Chiang Mai here.
Whenever I go to the Thai restaurant, they ask me level of spice on a scale from 1 to 5. And so I guess we could approach it like that. I usually go 2, for those of you wondering.
Oh, okay.
I do have some other sounds here that we could play as well. If we want to go through some of the ones that we got from the internet, as well as some of the ones that we put together on our own, I'll agree with you that they aren't quite as good as some of the ones that I saw coming through on the Twitter sphere. But at the same time, I have some predictions, I guess, some takes for the 2019 season that I'd be willing to discuss as well.
All right, let's save that for the end. Let's just go through here in a very random fashion and just evaluate people's takes. Are you good?
Okay, I'm ready.
Okay.
What do we got?
Tua is slightly overrated.
Tua Tagovailoa.
Yeah, this comes to us from a Georgia fan. I know you're shocked to hear that.
Sure.
I think Jake Fromm is very good, but Tua is slightly overrated. I don't know what the collective rating of him is. I think he's excellent.
Tua last season.
Yeah.
Completed 69% of his passes and finished with 43 touchdowns and 6 interceptions.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not going to pretend that he didn't play on one of the best teams in college football. Of course he did. He had a ton of support around him. But on the heels of what he did in the national championship game against Georgia, that game, you remember that mm-hmm. game, that second
yep,
half game?
I do.
On the heels of him doing that, to come out this past season was a little nicked up down the stretch. It is really, really difficult for me to call that person overrated. 43 touchdowns to 6 interceptions is a hell of a year. I don't care who you are.
2014, TCU would have won the national championship had they made the playoff. If you remember, this is the 51-48 year with
yeah,
Baylor.
Right. Ooh.
So the 2014 TCU team, Trevon Boykin, I believe, was their starting quarterback.
That's
yes.
Right. Yes, that's right.
Do they make and win? I don't think they're beating Ohio State.
Probably
I really
not,
don't. No. I don't even think they're beating. God, are they beating Sims, Alabama? I don't think they are.
I don't think so. That was a really good TCU team, though.
It was a really good TCU team. They finished this 2014 TCU team, finished with the, I'm going by S&P Plus here, 9th overall S&P, 17th offense, 13th defense. I think that's good. That Alabama team was still excellent. The Ohio State team was so strong. And the best quarterback in the country was at Oregon that year, the Heisman winning QB and Marcus Mariota. I don't see it. Nah.
Well, you mentioned TCU and that jogs.
I think it's a 1.5 out of 5.
1.5 out of 5.
Yeah.
We'll give it the Emerald.
This is a little bam. Yeah. That's a little bam.
Just a little bam. You mentioned TCU, and yeah. I want to link that up with another take that I saw coming through. We had couple of these referencing a promotion slash relegation system in college football. How do you feel about that? Now, of course, it's hypothetical.
Yeah.
Completely theoretical. Would drop a nuclear bomb on the existing system of college football.
Sure.
Would effectively end the sport as we know it and spawn something new. How do you feel about that?
Well, you'd have to change everything. You'd have to, the conferences wouldn't exist in the same way. TV deals wouldn't be structured. I'm talking about this from like an actual reality point of view. I'm totally fine with it. I am totally fine with it from a competitive standpoint because each conference has 2 to 3 schools who, if they're not dedicated to football, the people running those schools have no clue as to how to build and sustain even bowl eligible-ish programs. Right. And so it's a waste of everybody's time. And not that it doesn't happen in other sports. The bottom of the NBA isn't all that good. The bottom of baseball, you know, we have teams tanking, I guess, in baseball now. That there are teams that are just inept. And it's a waste of everybody's time. Especially when we have now a good handful of G5 schools who would compete week in and week out. I'm not saying win conferences, but would compete and be interesting and play. You know, they run styles on offense and defense that are interesting watches and would give us something better than Kansas, Oregon State, Rutgers, the past couple of years of North Carolina. It is just Louisville from last year where you're just tuning in. You're like, oh, cool. It's 47-3 at halftime. I want no part of that being a part of our ecosystem. I want as many good games as possible. And that is a way that if we were to completely upend everything,
right,
I would be for.
Yeah, I think it solves 3 problems. So what we're talking about when we talk about promotion and relegation, by the way,
yeah,
to give you the abridged description of what this is, it's like English soccer where they've got several divisions. The best teams are in the top division, the Premier League. The bottom, I guess, would be League 2, but a certain number of teams that finish atop, right, their respective divisions get promoted to the division above, yeah, whereas the bottom 3, or bottom 2, I forget the exact number, get relegated down to the division below. So it gives everyone some impetus to try and win their division. It certainly makes things interesting come the end of the year. I think within a college football sense, and of course this would never happen, but it would solve 3 problems. If you're a team like a North Texas, we like North Texas. They're on the right track, but North Texas is in technically the same division, if you will, as Alabama. They will never get a shot at the same trophy as Alabama. And effectively, yeah, they are competing, of course, for a conference championship, but beyond that, really a consolation prize. Maybe to just get one sip from that chalice of the New Year's Six, excuse me. It would give a team like that a chance to play up, to build themselves up, to get promoted to as high a division as possible, and maybe give someone like a Seth Luttrell more impetus to stick around, to ride this thing out, to see if he, sure, can get his team built up into a higher division. It also partially would solve the issue of unbalanced schedules. And I say unbalanced from the perspective of some teams playing really difficult schedules, other teams playing more cream puffs. If they're all playing each other within division, that sort of solves at least one of the issues we have within college football now. And then the final point here very quickly is it decouples promotion, as we understand it, from conference realignment, which is when you mentioned TCU, that's what jogged my memory. TCU effectively got promoted in the current system due to being accepted by the Big 12. They can now play, right, for that highest trophy because they're in the Big 12. I don't like the fact that it's set up the way it's set up and that a team like a North Texas will never have a shot at that trophy because they're not in a Power 5. So interesting topic,
certainly hypothetical, very theoretical, will never happen, but I am a huge proponent and a fan of that idea.
You get a one. Waylon Frank. Nick Saban has won his last national championship.
Wow. Wow.
So, the evidence to that is, one, it's incredibly difficult to win a national championship. Two, Clemson and Georgia, talent-wise, along with arguably Ohio State, although it's a different story with a new coach, so it's hard to say that, you know, everybody's on the same page, everything is simpatico. But Georgia and Clemson are arguably surpassing, if not on that same level, and somehow have a little bit more momentum and juice on the recruiting field, even if Alabama is still pulling in ridiculous classes.
Hold on one second.
Yeah.
Georgia is surpassing Alabama?
Talent-wise, not results-wise. Yes.
Okay.
What Georgia has done these past couple years, yeah.
I don't know if they're surpassing.
Look at those classes.
You got to do it consistently year in and year out for a number of years.
I'm totally with you. I'm telling you right now, there are people who, smart people, not me, not you, who are saying things. They're whispering, Ty. Georgia is there. And if they're not there, they're right behind them, slimmest of margins, with the possibility, when you look at certain position groups and how deep they've become at them, that they're inching ahead.
All right. Well, they're on the right track, and we know.
So has Nick Saban won his last national championship? Is that a spicy take?
I don't think it's too spicy. It's not level five spicy. It's at least a 3.5, though.
He's been attrition proof this long with his coaches leaving year in and year out. But that doesn't last forever.
It doesn't last forever. The question is, how much longer is he going to coach? I did see that he had a hip replacement, and he went back to work pretty much the next day.
Yeah. I mean, hip replacements. My mother-in-law had one of those, and she bounced back real quick, too. I don't think it's all that uncommon to recover pretty quickly.
However, it really does speak to the work ethic of Nick Saban. He clearly still enjoys the job. It's something he enjoys doing. I don't think he's won his last national championship. I think there is enough talent there to sustain him for some period of time after what we saw last year with the Clemson loss. They're still clearly going to have a shot at this thing. They're probably going to be back in the playoff in 2020. So I am optimistic, especially with Tua Tagovailoa, that they're going to be back in that game before long and have another crack at it.
Here is my rebuttal. The 2009 Texas team, and I think somebody actually had a take along these lines. Like, if Colt McCoy doesn't get hurt, this is Robert Larkin. If Colt McCoy wasn't injured in the Rose Bowl, Texas sustains a dynasty that mirrors Alabama over the last decade. I don't know how that makes Garrett Gilbert better, but okay. I think there's a possibility that the manner in which Alabama lost was deflating to the point where it's going to be tough to recover. Not to win 11 games this year, not even to win the SEC. I think that's all a more than reasonable bet. But I think there is going to be, if it hasn't already happened, a turning point where they were just unable to sustain momentum. And just being drilled in the national championship game in front of the world to see qualifies as that. I'm not saying it is. I'm saying it qualifies as potentially that. Because that was a huge, huge night and potentially a huge shift in the power structure of the sport. I'm kind of on board with this. I don't think this is the hottest take, actually, because I think there's truth behind it.
I understand where people are coming from with that take. But it's how many times before has the Alabama dynasty been dead?
I'm not saying it's dead. I'm saying this is not as hot as it might intend on its surface.
Okay. Let me give you one of my own
I'm spicy!
This is a spicy one. And we've talked about it before. I realize in light of the tweet, we may have some new listeners to this program.
Yeah.
This is one of those things that every time I bring it up, you tell me I'm nuts. Every time I bring it up, other people besides you also tell me I'm nuts.
Uh-huh.
I have no problem with the old fumble out of the end zone equaling a touchback rule.
Why?
I have zero problems with that.
I know.
My theory is this. Not every rule in the game of football is uniformly applied, especially when you're talking about the end zone. If you intentionally ground the football, normally it's a loss of down. Unless it's in the end zone. Then it's a safety.
Right.
If you hold, normally it's 10 yards, except when it's in the end zone.
It's safety, correct.
It's a safety. You can actually fumble the football, Dan. You can fumble the football. Mm-hmm. As long as you maintain possession long enough to get the nose of the ball over the line.
Right.
Then it's 6 points. Anywhere else in the field, that's a fumble. But right. down at the goal line, it's 6 points. When we get down to the end zone, the rules are treated a little bit differently.
But it just feels more like you understand why a penalty in your own end zone is 2 points.
I get it.
There's something that makes sense about that ruling. It's arbitrary because you could have just as easily say, let's move you back to the 20. Let's move you back to the 10. Let's move you back 5 yards behind where you fumbled it. It's just an arbitrary decision as to, yep, change of possession.
The end zone, Daniel, just means more.
Okay.
And to that I say, hold on to the ball if you want to score.
I don't think you're wrong for holding this position, but I think you have to sort of say, well, rule's a little arbitrary.
Oh, I get it. I get that. Yeah. But I'm okay with it in its present state.
1994 Penn State would hang 50 on 94 Nebraska. They would have won the head-to-head comfortably.
Holy cow, that's a deep cut, right? 94.
So is that Kerry Collins, Kajana Carter?
That was a good team.
They beat Oregon in the Rose Bowl.
Yep. They beat Akili Smith, your boy.
Kyle Brady. Yeah, my boy Akili Smith. Yeah, we got Bobby Engram.
Yep.
Joe Juravicious.
How about it, man?
I think the depth of that Nebraska team was so scary. And that specific system. I know you're not a triple option guy, Ty, but when that thing was rolling, whoo. I would put it at Nebraska -5.5, and I would lay those points.
Tommy Frazier is one of the all-time great college football players.
Yeah.
Tough sell for me. That's a spicy take, I'd say.
Okay.
What else do we got coming in? We had one from
Joel. That was extreme. That's a 4 out of 5, because I don't think that's happening, but whatever.
What did we get from our friend Joel Klatt, Dan?
Oh, here we go. Up at the top. 1, the game clock should not stop for first downs outside of the last 2 minutes of each half.
I
go back and forth. Do you think college football games should be quicker? I don't know. I like college football.
I'm with it the way it is.
The only time where it's rough to me, and this is just, you know, happenstance, you get like old Cal Wazoo, you get a double air raid matchup kicking off at 10:30, and you're asking me, this is Eastern time, you're asking me to stay up until 3 a.m.
Yeah, that's a tough ask.
That's a rough ask. But beyond that, with the clock stopping with every incomplete pass.
What is the issue with games taking as long as they do?
I don't know. I think people just want to move on to the next game. They just want to see they want to see the action more condensed.
Because we've been doing this for a while. I find it very rarely that people come to us either at a live show or through email, however, and say, you know, I'd really like college football more if the games were quicker.
Right. The rent is too damn high. The games are too damn long.
Most of the time, and I'm not saying I'm against games that move quicker, but I'm just saying the argument for the quicker game has never really landed with me. Most of the time, like you said, people would just want to move on to watch other college football games.
Right.
Usually Saturday is devoted to college football.
To be fair, Joel Klatt is the one who needs to find time to pee during these long games, as he is an analyst in the booth. And I don't know how long commercial breaks are, but like if you were given 2 minutes flat, where not only did you have to be back, you know, at your desk, so to speak, but you had to be on the air and talking and having high energy. Do you think you could make that work? 2 minutes going for probably a sizable pee.
You would think he's drinking water up there to keep the instrument
your voice. Yeah, of course.
That's a lot of pressure.
Do you think you would be able to immediately unzip and go and then on a dime turn? Like you're talking about like your 20-yard cone drill?
Yeah.
I think that's where Joel's coming from secretly with this.
I could probably pull that off 70% of the time.
Do you think there's a spit bucket? I want to know this now. Because there's a lot of people who say you shouldn't drink a lot of water before you go to bed so you don't wake up in the middle of the night.
Right.
Do you think they're drinking water up there? I mean, I guess you have a longer commercial break between quarters, but you're not yourself if you got ants in your pants, Ty.
No. That's right.
I think there's some truth behind that. Number two, ineligible man downfield should be a one-yard barrier, not 3 yards. So this is sort of an anti-RPO stance, and I get it.
I get it.
But I like RPOs. I mean, you're just making it NFL rules at this point.
Yeah.
The ACC and SEC should play 9 conference games.
I like that.
Well, we get a lot of, you know, by the end of the season, by November, there are a lot of comparisons. Okay, does Alabama deserve to be number one? Should it be Ohio State? Should it be USC? Should it be Oklahoma? Whoever. USC. That was a joke, Ty. I just threw that one in there to see if people were paying attention. It generally seems to even out. A lot of those top schools that we end up comparing schedule pretty well out of conference. They're not, you know, Baylor from 2012 or something. Alabama's scheduled magnificently well. LSU is scheduled terrifically well. Georgia, a great schedule these past few years for the most part. Clemson is scheduled up with what? Texas A&M and Georgia. Like, these teams are scheduling pretty well, especially at the top, because they know that by the end of the year, resumes are going to be a conversation. So I haven't really found myself thinking this sort of sucks that they're only playing 8 conference games, because they can get away with it because people show up to their games and people watch their games on TV, even when they're playing the Citadel, even when they're playing Prairie View A&M, whatever. And so I guess it would be better, but I don't really see the case for why they should. If that makes any sense.
Dan, you know what can be really frustrating?
Oh, so many things, but I want you to be specific.
Especially if you're in a hurry, if you're running late. You find yourself stuck at a railway crossing and you're waiting for a train. You ever have that happen?
Was just there a few minutes ago.
And if the signals are going, the train's not even there yet, you feel tempted to maybe try and make it across the tracks.
Mm-hmm.
The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, NHTSA, says, don't ever try that, please.
Don't.
Trains are going a lot faster than you think, and they can't stop. Even if the engineer hits the brakes, they can take a train, I don't know, like over a mile to stop. By that time, what used to be your car is a hunk of junk, and what used to be you, you get the picture. The point is, you can't ever know how quickly the train's going to arrive, how long it's going to take to stop, even if it sees you. Don't tempt disaster. If the signals are on, the train's on its way, and you just need to remember one thing, you got to stop because the trains can't. That's a safety message from our friends over at the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. Also, this show brought to you in part by our good friends. Dan, just give me your rule of life. What is it?
You're only as comfortable as your feet.
Bombas, BOMBAS.com. If you're like Dan and I, you think about your socks often throughout the course of the day. Why not discover the socks that change the way you'll think about socks forever? They're called Bombas. Mm-hmm. We have countless pairs of Bombas by now. They've been a longtime sponsor of the show. We like their style, their comfort, their quality. They've got a great mission where they will donate a pair for every pair bought, because socks are one of the most asked for items in homeless shelters. Not only are you getting great socks, you're contributing to a great cause as well. The most comfortable socks in the history of feet, super soft natural cotton. Every pair comes with arch support, a seamless toe, a cushioned footbed that's comfy but not too thick. They've got colors, patterns, lengths, styles, everything you need to either look good at the gym, at the office like me, or if you're going on out of town. And as I said, for every pair you purchase, they're going to donate a pair to someone in need. Go to Bombas, BOMBAS.com/solid today. You're going to get 20% off your first purchase. That's BOMBAS.com/solid, 20% off Bombas.com/solid. Believe me, you try these out, you're going to love them. You're going to wear them all over the place. Go out and buy your Bombas and then write to us on Twitter.
Ty, we have a hot take here that I think is magnificent.
I'm I'm spicy.
What do we got?
Bama doesn't want that UMass smoke. Mike Locapo. Okay. This brings something up in my brain, though. If you were to rank Alabama diehard fans,
okay,
one through however many Alabama football fans there are in this world. So say there are 10 million Alabama fans, okay? Number one is the most diehard Alabama fan. His or her life fully dedicated to Alabama football, calling into radio shows on every single message board, posters on their walls, their, you know, clippings everywhere.
Right, right.
They live, breathe, eat Alabama
football. So we're talking our friend Adam Abdallah from ESPN Radio Chicago.
Yeah, somebody like that.
Okay.
And so that person is number one, and you rank them by their diehardiness all the way through 10 million, okay?
Okay.
How far down would you have to go to find somebody with an equal amount of passion for UMass football? So, like, wow. Is there somebody who is as passionate about UMass football as the 8 millionth most passionate Alabama fan is about Alabama?
Like, who is the Harvey Updike of UMass right. football? And where would he rank on that?
How far down do you have to go?
On the Alabama side. Oh, my gosh.
Where you're just like, somebody was just freaking pumped about the Mark Whipple era.
Right.
They're like, this is the guy. How far down would you have to go? I maybe even percentage wise, but I'll put it out of 10 million.
You would probably have to go, I would say, at least 60% down on that totem pole.
So 6 million ish.
Yeah.
You think there is somebody as passionate about UMass football as the 6 millionth most passionate Alabama fan?
I think that's right. That's how I feel. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I tend to think that it's an arbitrary question, but there's somebody out there who has categorized and cataloged everything about UMass football throughout the years.
That's tremendous, that question.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Here's one that came through. So we did a show, I don't know, we do a show every week, but we did a show recently where we talked about, where I said specifically that Alex Hornibrook was, quote, a massive upgrade over James Blackman. And I caught a little bit of flack on Twitter for that.
I don't know.
Caught a little bit of flack.
I don't know who I'd rather have quarterbacking my team right now.
I think
James Blackman's going to be broken in half.
I stand by the comment, but statistically, yeah. When you look at what Hornibrook has done over his career versus what Blackman did in that one extended season that he had as a true freshman, statistically, it's pretty similar. Statistically speaking. So I get the fact that someone would take umbrage to the massive component of that statement. He may be an upgrade. He certainly provides depth. He's more of a known quantity. We could talk about that on some other show. I'm sure we will as the season gets closer. But the right. one, the take that I found nestled in that conversation was one particular guy who wrote in to say that he thought Alex Hornibrook, the real reason he was leaving Florida State is because he fashions himself at some point in the future as a college football coach.
Okay.
And that the move to Florida State was one that could give him ample opportunity to stay on after his eligibility has expired so that he can become a GA and so launch his college football coaching career.
This is not unique to him. And I could imagine that this was something that may have come up when Gardner Minshew, I believe, committed to Alabama from ECU originally. That, you know, the prospects weren't looking good. At least set yourself up for the future.
Right.
That to me is not a full stretch. I get that.
It's not a full stretch in a lot of circumstances. However, Hornibrook was a guaranteed starter at Wisconsin. He was going to be the starting quarterback. He was going to be the starting quarterback.
You see the guy coming in this year?
I know he's very good. I know he's very good.
You see what Alex Hornibrook looked like last year?
I get it. I've made fun of Hornibrook for the last 3 years, okay? I get it. I'm just saying.
I mean, guaranteed starter week one.
Hornibrook is your guaranteed starter week one.
I don't know. Leave
that situation to go to another situation where he is potentially a backup, potentially a third stringer, who knows? It just does not seem like this would be one of those situations where he'd want to leave where he was at and go somewhere else because he's trying to set himself up for a coaching career? I don't get it.
I mean, this is so far-fetched that a college football player is really smart and forward-looking. It's not so far-fetched.
I don't
like Alex Hornibrook probably has a pretty good idea. He's not an NFL quarterback, right?
I would hope so.
Why not two birds? Two birds, Ty.
I would hope so. By the way, people are very excited about James Blackman this year.
Okay, great.
So I hope it works out for him. Where else we got?
We got somebody who said that had, let's see, I want to get the right wording here. If Mississippi State paid Cam's father like Auburn did, they'd have a title right now.
Ooh.
Okay. Well,
Mississippi State didn't have Nick Fairley on that team, did they?
They didn't have Nick Fairley. But this is still I think they went 9-4, it looks like, including the bowl win over Michigan. I think that was a Chris Ralph team,
mm-hmm.
if I remember correctly. It's a pretty good Mississippi State team. Defensive coordinator, Manny Diaz, that was his first year there. They don't hang with Alabama. They barely lose to a top 15 Arkansas in double overtime. They comfortably lose to LSU, and they get barely edged out by a Cam Newton Auburn team, which at the very least means early on, they were very close to being Auburn. Auburn did not have a particularly good defense that year. Nick Fairley was great.
That was a Ted Roof defense, if I remember correctly, which explains a lot, actually.
Does explain a lot.
Yeah.
And the Auburn team around Cam had talent. Michael Dyer, Philip Lutzenkirchen, there were guys there. But this was not a stacked Auburn team. It was a one-man team in a lot of ways with Cam Newton. So I actually don't think this is super hot. National championship is a lot to say. A lot goes into that and a lot of variables. And, you know, I think Auburn was probably better situated to beat Alabama than a Mississippi State team with Cam. But there's some coolness to that, actually. I don't think it's the spiciest.
All right. Now,
is Cam Newton that year good for winning two more games, including
he was
a loss to Cam Newton, which is they're probably beating Auburn, right? With Cam Newton instead of playing Cam Newton.
Yes, I would agree with that.
So that takes them to 9 regular season wins. I would say they're probably beating Arkansas, a team they lost to in two overtimes, right?
Yes, agreed.
So they're now better than Arkansas. So now they're at 10 regular season wins. They lost by 22 to LSU. We know Cam Newton had arguably the game of his life against LSU, but that's certainly closer. And Alabama, another game of his life, they lose by 20. So can they go 11-1? Sneak in maybe? I don't know. I think it's not the craziest thing, although Auburn is getting in, and they didn't lose a game that year, obviously, but Auburn is getting in with one loss ahead of Mississippi State with one loss, pretty clearly.
That seems fair, yeah.
So the Mississippi State brand is holding them back, but if they have the Heisman-winning quarterback, then suddenly the brand gets
that helps.
Pretty spicy.
That definitely helps.
I'm going to say there's a good shot.
Okay. I don't know if I feel good about it, but okay. A better shot for sure. Let me throw two out at you and you tell me which one is spicier. Both of these came in.
Yeah.
We've got one that Michigan will beat Ohio State in 2019. And then we've got another that the Pac-12 will miss the playoff again in the 2019-2020 season. Which is the spicier of those two takes?
Oh, Michigan beating Ohio State is way spicier.
So you're not feeling the Pac-12 making the playoff.
Who's the Pac-12's playoff team?
I don't know. There is one. I think
is the Pac-12's playoff team if they get one in?
If they
is it Washington? I'm not saying will Washington get in the playoff. I'm saying if by chance a Pac-12 team were to make it, the winner of the Pac-12 is.
It's either
Ty
Oregon
said
or Washington.
Confidently. See, it could be Stanford. I like KJ Costello plenty.
I don't like that they lose Bryce Love, Arthego Whiteside, Caden Smith,
Colby
four starters along the line. Yeah. Not feeling it.
I don't feel good about anybody in the Pac-12 winning the Pac-12. So that's it's a pretty cold take to say the Pac-12 is missing out again, because I don't know who to feel good about.
On the Michigan side, I feel good for Michigan this year. It's long overdue. They have won 3 games in the last 18 meetings with Ohio State. And that doesn't even count the game they lost by 30 in 2010 when that win was vacated. Mm-hmm. They get Ohio State in Ann Arbor this year, a lot back on offense. Going to take some time to sort out their defense, losing Rashawn Gary, Chase Winovich, Devin Bush, et cetera, et cetera. But I think they're in good shape. I'm excited to see what Ohio State looks like under Justin Fields, and especially with Ryan Day. But Ryan Day is not Urban Meyer. He could be a great coach, but there's a reason that they say you don't want to follow a legend. And I'm curious to see how he manages through a full 12-game slate as opposed to three.
This would be a good year. I'm a believer in Dwayne Haskins being exceptional and a believer in Dwayne Haskins with time in that system being exceptional, being a better situation than Justin Fields coming in and expected to be Dwayne Haskins immediately. So I think it's a good year for Michigan to be great and better and play like they're better than Ohio State. Ohio State's defense should be really good, especially up front this year. I'm sure Penn State fans remember Chase Young. He's still there. He's still there. Tyreek Smith, still there. Still great. So I'm still a believer that this should be the year, should there be a year ever again that Michigan beats Ohio State, it should be this year.
By the way, if you want a really spicy take, Dan.
Oh, look at that sandwich. I'm so hungry.
Oh, boy.
To close out Michigan's season, they are home against Michigan State, a.k.a. Little Brother. Mm-hmm. Then on the road in Bloomington at Indiana before they come back home to square off against their hated rival, Ohio State. If that Indiana game isn't an all-time great letdown look-ahead spot, I don't know what is. I don't know how good Indiana will be this year, but at least on paper in late April, that looks pretty damn interesting to me.
Somebody gave us... There are 10 teams and only 10 teams are right around 10. There are maybe the same 10 teams every year that can win a title. No other school has or will ever have a chance. The AP Top 25 finished as such last year, each of which at various points of the season were kind of threatening. Clemson, Alabama, Ohio State, Oklahoma, Notre Dame, LSU, Florida, Georgia, Texas are the top nine. Washington State finishes number 10. Outside of that top nine, in terms of teams that have the infrastructure, can amass the talent, put themselves in a position to sneak in and get by, whatever. I think Michigan, Penn State, and then I don't know.
Florida State?
I don't know about Oregon. What'd you say after?
Florida State.
Yeah, Florida State.
I think there's more than 10.
I think 12.
I think there's more than 12.
Do you think A&M is a team that can win a national championship?
Yes, especially under Jimbo Fisher.
Okay.
He will put the infrastructure in place to make
West Virginia.
Possible. No.
I mean, I would say USC should be added to that list at their absolute best, but it's tough to foresee it in any sort of immediate future. UCLA, I will say no.
No. I think it's 15 to 20, somewhere in that range.
I think 12 to 14.
Okay. Let's do one or two more.
Okay, here we go. How about this one, Ty? The 2019 season will be Chip Kelly's final season as UCLA's head coach.
Final season. The only way Charles Chip Kelly isn't coaching in 2020 is if he leaves on his own volition.
That's what I'm saying.
So I don't think there's any chance he's getting fired. I don't think there's any chance he's leaving. I think this is a guy who genuinely enjoys football.
Is wanting to coach football the same exact thing as not only do I want to coach football, but I want to do it for the UCLA Bruins?
They are going to have to pry the playbook from his dead lifeless fingers before he'll leave.
Do you know who submitted this question, this take to us? Dan Rubenstein from New York. I'm saying that's my take. 2019 is the last year.
You think he's
going to
quit?
He has seen what it's like to coach UCLA, and we've all come to a point doing things in our lives, pursuits, where we've said, you know what? I'm cutting bait. This is not for me. I don't like where this is heading. I don't want to be a part of this. This is based on no knowledge. This is based on no sources. This is based on no inside information. But I don't think succeeding at UCLA is something that a Chip Kelly type will be the one to make happen.
Okay.
I think a different kind of guy who wants, whose goal forever is to be at a place like UCLA, to transform a place like UCLA. And I think Chip Kelly's looking around at college football in 2019, the recruiting, you know, playing 45 minutes away from campus, having academic standards to deal with, or I guess in the case of UCLA, no standards to deal with other than just cold, hard cash. I think Chip Kelly takes a long, hard look and says, no.
Wow. Okay.
I'm good.
Here's one for you.
Okay.
I'll close out with this. I would rather have the first down line than HDTV.
Well, what does that mean?
The first down, the computer-generated first down.
No, line. I know.
You have to pick one or the other.
If given the choice.
Given the choice, you're taking the first down line versus HD.
Whoa, that's really good. I mean, we go one play where the graphic department doesn't spit out the line of scrimmage and the yellow first down line, and you're in my head.
No.
What sport am I watching? How am I supposed to know what's going on? Meanwhile, the sport on TV has been like that for 94% of its existence.
Right.
Which would you rather have, HDTV or the first down yellow line?
I'm the one that wrote I'd rather have the first down line.
Okay, I figured it was you.
I think the first down line is one of the greatest inventions in modern television history.
Do you like having the field goal line?
No.
Like, they need to get to this point, or career long is right here for a 47-yarder. I like doing the math in my head.
Wait, right. With the first down line, it's not arbitrary. I know where they're getting that information because it's always it's always the same distance.
It's not exact, but it's, you know,
it's close
based
enough.
Based on some true math.
The field goal line, I always wonder if the man's trying to stick it to me. Like, where did they get this information from?
I think I'm at 11 teams, by the way, that can win a national championship on any given year.
Give me 15 to 20.
By the way, shout out to our pal Peter Hoffman, who has just a raging college football piece of excitement in his pants for That's Sean Gleason, right. The Oklahoma State new offensive coordinator. He has hot take: Northwestern wins 10 or 11 games this year behind Hunter Johnson.
Wow.
And his simmering take is Oklahoma State and Sean Gleason's offense take the Big 12 by storm and win the conference.
Boom shakalaka. Okay.
Okay. So here's it's a good year for Oklahoma State to be interesting and new.
Oh, sure. Yeah, for sure. Here's the way this works. It is late. Dan is tired. I am tired. As we said at the top of the show, one of the latest shows we've ever done talking college football. We thank everyone who wrote in for helping us crowdsource this episode to some degree.
And respond to any and all takes, by the way.
Yeah, by no means does it mean that when the show stops, you should stop sending these in. SolidVerbal@gmail.com is our email address. As always, you can still hit us up on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram, and on the subreddit. You mentioned Peter. He helps run the Solid Verbal subreddit at reddit.com/r/solidverbal.
Mm-hmm.
Hop on in the community. Join the conversation with other Verballers. Let us know what your hot takes are. I'm very curious to see more of these. It popped a little bit more than I expected when we put it on Twitter earlier this evening. So keep them coming. They're always entertaining. And by all means, subscribe to the show if you haven't already. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. Just look for The Solid Verbal. If you're unable to find it there, go on out to our website, solidverbal.com. And while you're there, hey, what the heck? Why not sign up for our newsletter? We use it sparingly whenever we have big announcements. By the way, Dan, we do have some shirts that are currently in the laboratory.
Oh, yeah. Did you get a chance to take a look at one of the two?
I'm pretty excited about this.
It's pretty good.
I stopped up at Mama H's for dinner after work today.
Sure.
And Mama H is very excited about this design.
Well, we're going to get her a shirt, aren't we?
We are.
All right. That's all I got.
Daniel, you take care of that instrument.
I will.
Good luck on your draft show. We will be back.
Go feed my son.
Go feed your son. Go do your fatherly duties. We will be back in a week post NFL draft.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure if we'll talk about it then or the week after, but before long, we'll break everything down. Enjoy it. We'll have much more to say in the days and weeks ahead. In the meantime, though, enjoy your week. Enjoy your weekend. Enjoy the rest of your evening. And in the meantime, until next time, stay solid.
Peace.